play this at the end of the season. This is like NHL season's done. But you know what? This is for Team Europe. This is, you know what? That's why you're clever. We're welcoming everyone now to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. Andy Petrillo alongside Jonas Siegel. You make your appearance when we're back on TV for the first time this week. National hockey writer for the Canadian Press, former TSN employee. Welcome back.
How are you?
I'm great. And I know you're not used to me giving you compliments, but before we got on the air, I said, oh, you've got so many great articles here for us to touch on. You're like, easy, easy. Were you waiting for some sort of joke?
Well, our history is usually that you try to poke fun, you try to tease, you try to rattle me, and it bounces right off me.
I do that out of love.
Yeah.
That's, you know, you kid because you love. That's why you do it. So, well, hockey is starting today. As far as the World Cup of Hockey goes, we have some pre-tournament games happening. So, what's today? We got Thursday, you got Team Czech Republic taking on Team Russia. That'll be at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Before that, though, you have Team Sweden taking on Team Finland at noon. And then it's Team Europe taking on Team North America at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That one's going to be in Quebec City. So hockey fans in Quebec get to pile in for that one. And we've been talking a lot about Team North America, and it seems like there's this general consensus that this is the team everyone wants to watch. It's also the only team left out of the eight teams that has not named a captain yet.
Right.
They don't have a leader, so to say.
They're so young. Who can be their leader?
But there's so many great leaders already in the making. I don't know, Connor McDavid could be wearing this C pretty soon.
Wait, so I need to know, are you one of these people who is excited to watch this tournament, or are you one of the people who's like, I don't like the whole concept. I think Team North America, it's dumb.
I'm in the middle because it's new. Like, even though we've seen World Cup of hockey before,
but
it's still new.
Ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So it's new. And I'm just, if anything, I'm curious. I'm curious to see how this is going to play out. I'm curious to see how it's accepted, not just by the fans, but even by the players. I mean, already there's some, you know, so Team North America, Team Europe are kind of considered to some people the gimmicky teams.
They are gimmicks.
Right? So Team Europe is represented by eight different countries are represented within Team Europe. So they have also decided that they're not going to play a national anthem before their games. We're not going to get into the, don't cringe. We're not getting into the national anthem talk and controversy. But basically, so the NHLPA and NHL released this saying that, you know, with respect to Team Europe, after careful consideration and consulting with team management, they decided to forego any form of musical tribute even prior to Team Europe's games. They basically said that their passion, loyalty for their own respective homelands and anthems made a surrogate musical tribute somewhat artificial and therefore unnecessary. So before tonight's game, they're actually going to listen to Team North America's anthems because they've decided to play both the Canadian and American.
So hokey. I don't know. Like, it's stupid. Who cares?
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what the hockey looks like. I was talking to Braden Holtby yesterday, and he was telling me that he's really concerned by what the goaltending is going to look like in this tournament, just because usually it takes goalies a few games. He said it takes him the whole preseason before he feels like he's ready to go. Mm-hmm. And this, they're getting like a game or two max. Like Carey Price, assuming he plays the first, well, we know he's playing the first game. Assuming he plays that and then he plays the exhibition finale, that's two games before the games start counting. That's nothing, especially for a guy who's been off 10 months. You wonder, even beyond the goalies, what effect it's going to have on the players, that they're basically jumping like right into this tournament without the benefit of like a lengthy exhibition schedule, a bunch of practices. Like, it starts so quick.
So are you saying that you think we're going to see a little hit and miss because they're still in getting ready for season?
Yeah, like Holtby thought the goaltending could be bad because guys just aren't in regular season form.
Couldn't that make it more exciting if we're going to see more goals then?
Yeah, and I think we're the intriguing part about it is seeing best on best to some degree. Like seeing Crosby playing on the same team as Taves and Sagan, like it's fun. And I know people are reluctant to embrace it because it is what it is, this cash grab of a tournament. But it still should be entertaining and interesting because, like, Connor McDavid and Auston Matthews and Jack Eichel, these guys are all playing together. When's that going to happen, right?
I also find it interesting, though, that a lot of guys are playing out of position, so to say. Like Austin Matthews, mm-hmm. for example, they have him on the wing.
They have to.
So because they have a lot of center. It's even same with, now Team Canada's had this.
Forever.
Yeah, they've had these quote-unquote problems, right? Because it's just you have like an embarrassment of riches. But they have 10 natural centers on this team. But these guys have to play on the wing. So you have guys that are just playing out of position. Do you think that matters for a young guy in Austin Matthews if he's already kind of playing on a position that's not what he's going to be used for with the Toronto Maple Leafs?
It might. I mean, it's not his natural position. And as I understand it, last year in Switzerland, he would have played center. He is a center. But that's what you do at these tournaments. Like, there's too much talent. Like, Tyler Seguin is playing the wing. Mm-hmm. Claude Giroux is actually playing center.
He's playing
center. Joe Thornton's playing on the wing. Like, just everybody in tournaments like this where it's best on best, you don't have a choice. But I think it's going to be interesting for Austin Matthews being in Toronto. Like, I thought the way that they started it, making him the quote-unquote 13th forward, I think that was a smart thing to do, just to kind of keep the idea, even if it's not real, that he's going to have to like earn his way up the lineup and he's going to have to, you know, earn his playing time.
But he also doesn't have NHL experience where these other guys already do.
Right. But come on. Like his talent is what his talent is.
Yeah, you're going to go based on talent.
But it's going to be, I think there's going to be added pressure for him playing in Toronto. Mm-hmm. Not that that should matter. I mean, guys like him are used to playing with pressure, but this is going to be like his first spotlight before he's even played a game or anything for the Leafs.
So if you're Lou, if you're Brendan, if you're anybody, if you're Mike Babcock, is this not a positive thing then? You want Austin Matthews to be exposed to NHL ice.
Yeah.
You also want him to be exposed to the fan base in Toronto and what that spotlight brings with it. So in many ways, there's so many things. And I brought this question up yesterday, and it's something I'm going to ask you as well. This is kind of what I'm feeling right now when it comes to the World Cup of Hockey. I feel right now that fans aren't exactly embracing the whole national pride thing. Like, I'm going to go for Team Canada. It feels like they're going to be keeping an eye on the players that represent their team. So if you're a Toronto Maple Leaf, what's the benefit here for a Matthews and a Morgan Riley? And what's Leo Komarov going to do? You know, and what are these other players? I mean, you got 8 players from the Toronto Maple Leafs roster who are representing their countries. It's almost like you want to see, what's Nikita Zaitsev all about? Not necessarily saying you're going to be waving the Russian flag, but there seems to be individual interest because of your team.
Yeah, but that's interesting. Do you think that people aren't going to get into it nationally or with the same national pride that they would for an Olympics because you're just cheering for your country? Like, I would imagine there are going to be a group of people who will just cheer for North America because it's a fun team and they've got all these young players. I wonder, to your point, like, if it will carry the same weight for fans that it does normally. Like, will they cheer or be as heartbroken if Canada somehow gets eliminated? I don't see any way Canada shouldn't win just based on their talent. But I wonder, like, and for the players too. I know players will be competitive and I think they'll be into it. But we've already seen, like, so many guys drop out of the tournament just because their NHL team is more important. I think that shows you, I don't know, kind of the pecking order.
Did you find it interesting when Tomas Hertl, you know, pulled out, he was still dealing with that knee injury from the playoffs? I just found it interesting, the statement that the San Jose Sharks came out with.
I wrote a story about it, and that was the most interesting part of the statement.
So if you didn't read it, I mean, I don't have it right in front of me right now, but it was to the tune of, we're just happy that he's showing a commitment to his team.
First.
Yeah, his commitment to his team first. Well, first of all, this is why it sticks out to me. Well, no kidding, Tomas Hertl is going to have a commitment to his team. So who was that? Why was that line even in there? Who was that really being directed towards, right? Like, oh, I'm glad Hertl's, you know, showing commitment to his team first. Okay, well, no kidding. He's going to do that. But why did you feel the need to emphasize that? I found that interesting.
If I'm reading between the lines, I would think that Doug Wilson is probably thinking, this tournament is not good for my team, maybe. That's the way I would read into it. Like, if you're an NHL general manager and you have nothing to do with the World Cup, you're not working for any of these teams, what benefit is this to your team?
This is and this is what we even discuss when it comes to the Olympics.
Yeah,
a business has to shut down for 2 weeks.
All downside. Like, there's nothing really good that can come of it for the Sharks. I mean, they've got Pavelski, they've got Thornton, they've got Couture, they've got Vlasic, they've got Burns. The only thing that could happen is one of those guys get hurt. And then their season is impacted. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I talked to John Cooper a couple weeks ago just about how he was getting ready for training camp that he wasn't going to be at. And one of the things he brought up at the end of our chat was the one thing in this tournament that will be interesting to watch is if someone gets hurt, because that'll just put a cloud over the whole tournament and the season.
But I feel like that's inevitable. Like, I almost feel like that's unfair, because hockey is a contact sport.
Yeah, but now you're impacting a team, and then like there's all the reverberations. Like, suddenly if player X gets hurt, suddenly that impacts the team, that impacts the coach, that impacts the GM, that impacts the bottom line of the team. Now, the team is still going to make money off the tournament, but it impacts the coach or the GM. Like, if I don't know, if one of the Sharks gets hurt, that hurts Pete DeBoer's lineup. And suddenly that hurts their playoff chances. And so, you know what I mean?
That's like, why I'm saying going into this tournament, I still feel like fans care about their team. So if Austin Matthews, Morgan, knock on wood, if these guys get injured, how are you as a Leaf fan now feeling about the World Cup of Hockey?
You'll hate it. You'll be like, "What? Why are they hurt? For what reason?" And the reason is that the NHL and the NHLPA crafted this idea, and it's, you can debate its merits, but it was a way to make money. And so if you're a fan of a team and suddenly that's what happened, your player got hurt for this money-making venture, you're not going to be happy at all. And it's going to happen, right? You said it. It's inevitable. Someone will get hurt. John Tavares at the Olympics got hurt, missed the rest of the year. And then you remember, I think Charles Wang came out and just blasted the Olympics, I think.
Well, it was even the whole Dominic Hasek thing that even brought up the problem with NHL teams not having accessibility to their players during the Olympics.
Yeah.
Right?
And
they want their own medical staff.
All part of this
them.
Fight about whether they'll go to the Olympics in 2018 is now the IIHF and the IOC, it's mostly it's the IOC, they want the NHL and the NHLPA to pay. And the NHL and PA are saying, we already shut down our season for 3 weeks. We already have to like screw up our schedule. And now you want us to pay on top of that? I don't think so.
So how much talk, and I know you've had a chance to speak to guys like Bettman, Daly, Donald Fuhr, how much talk is there about the potential of the World Cup of Hockey? How much are they watching to see its popularity and its reception here as a possible replacement then for the Olympics? Is that something that they're trying to do?
I don't think they see it as a replacement. I think they see it as something that could work in conjunction with the Olympics, where every 2 years you have a World Cup or you have an Olympics. Like, they can bounce back between the two. But I think in the case that they don't go to the Olympics, it's not a bad thing to have this tournament internationally that you make all the money from, right? Like, you can see why that would be attractive. But Bettman told me that they don't see it as a replacement, but I think it's nice insurance if the, like, if the IOC doesn't budge and I'm Bettman, I'm going to say, you know what, we've got our own tournament. See ya.
What is Donald Fuhr, though, saying about what the players think?
He said, the key line that I remember him saying was, all things being equal, they want to go. So that's basically code for, if they're not, if they're going to be made to pay on top, it ain't happening.
Really? You think even players would feel that way?
I mean, if you're a player and I asked you to pay something to go to the Olympics, would you do it?
But so many of them do. So many athletes do pay their own way when they go to the Olympics, right? That's why they have fundraisers.
Right,
and
but for most of those athletes, the Olympics is their thing. Like, it's the biggest thing in
sport. It is their thing.
It's not the biggest thing in hockey. The Stanley Cup is the biggest thing in hockey. So now all of a sudden, like, are you asking me, if I said to you, you're playing for, you're a forward on the Minnesota Wild, and I say, you can go to the Olympics, but I need you to pay, I don't know, $100,000. Doing it?
Jeez, we've got to look into the price first. But okay, it's a tough one. But now, if you're Sidney Crosby, you are the face of Canada.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, Canada finds out Sidney Crosby said no because he has to pay.
I don't think it's going to be the Sidney Crosbys. It's going to be the guys on the other countries who aren't making 8.7 or whatever his salary is.
Because it also can become a PR nightmare, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we see how this can be a PR nightmare.
Millionaires don't want to pay,
millionaires turn down the opportunity to represent their country because now they have to pay.
And obviously it's way more complicated than that.
Yeah.
But that's, you're right, that's how it'll, that's what it's about. Like, that, they have not been, Gary Bettman has not been shy in saying, like, this is about money. If they want us to pay, we're not going. Mm-hmm. Or basically is what he said. And we'll find out December or January whether they can come to an agreement.
Is that, yeah, that's how early.
Well, what do you think the reaction would be if they said we're not going to the Olympics?
I think it's going to be a really bad reaction. I think fans have become accustomed to seeing great hockey at the Olympics.
Yeah.
As broadcasters, it's a big deal for us to also get the viewership on TV. That's why, I mean, people during the Winter Games, that's what they're watching.
Well, how mad would...
That's network dollars. It's advertising dollars.
I don't know who has the rights, but how mad would they be if suddenly NHLers...
That would be CBC, and I can tell you right now.
How bad would the games be? Like, who would want to watch hockey?
They wouldn't be happy about it. No, not at all.
It would suck.
Yeah, so now you have networks getting involved, right? From NBC to CBC here in Canada. Not happy.
Well, and that was one of the things that Don Fehr told me. I asked him if the players in baseball ever, you know, thought about going to the Olympics during their season. And he said it was broached initially at some point, but the TV side basically said, yeah, no. Think about how many games you're going to be costing us in the middle of summer when there's nothing on. Yeah, that's not happening.
Don't kid yourself. The networks have a lot of say in on what goes down, too. All right, little short break here on Leafs Lunch as we continue Leafs talk as well as World Cup of Hockey talk. That seems to be dominating everything because it starts. So technically, hockey has started, people. Don't go anywhere. You continue to listen on TSN 1050 as well as watching. Stay with us. Welcome back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050, TSN.ca, the TSN Go app, as well as TSN 4. Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com. Annie Petrillo alongside Jonas Siegel, the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. We have a lot of articles to touch on. You just posted one. Is this on Brad Marchand?
It is. So...
What in the world are you and Brad talking about?
I've heard the pronunciation so many different ways.
Marchand.
Yeah.
I have no
What
clue.
Is it? I should look that up.
The consensus, well, you were talking to him.
Why I know, but do I say, Brad, first question, how do you say your name?
How do you say your name? Well, because you know what, in all fairness to us, hold on a second, players do change their names.
Oh, all the time.
All the time, because a lot of them, when they come to the National Hockey League, especially if they're from over, like they're from Europe, they don't want to offend anyone about how we pronounce their names. And then as they get more comfortable and they realize they're going to be in the NHL, they're like, actually, this is how you say my name. And now we don't know.
Well, there was a Leaf prospect. He is still a Leaf prospect. I think it's now pronounced Victor Louvre, but when he came over, I think it was Louvre, which is closer to the Swedish
L-O-O-V,
way of saying it.
L-O-O-V, I would
yeah,
say
and
Louvre.
Then they said, no, it's Love, and then last year they said, no, it's Louvre. I think it's Louvre.
Just
I'm not 100%
Vicky.
Sure. I'm never going to call him by his last name. Like, I'm not
Vicky.
Calling the game, so I don't really
yeah.
care.
But you want to make sure.
But I want to say it
yeah,
right.
Yeah, out of respect, you say it right.
But anyway, so, he's Brad Marchand.
Brad Marchand, yeah.
He's... Like, I just think he's so unique when you look at Team Canada. Like, there is nobody like him on that team.
Oh, he's unique, all right.
There's just, like, all these, like, everybody's competing for Art Ross trophies and hearts. And, like, there's Norris trophy guys. And then there's, like, Brad Marchand, who just doesn't.
Then there's the stir the pot guy.
Yeah.
But they like him.
I know. And it's interesting, like, he starts camp with Crosby and Bergeron. And obviously, there are reasons for that. He plays with Bergeron in Boston. Bergeron and Crosby play well together. It makes sense. But I just wonder, like, looking ahead to this tournament, like, who is going to be the guy who on this stage kind of shines maybe more than we might expect? Like, I think Tyler Seguin's a guy who should stand out in this tournament. And obviously, he's well-known, he's well-established, but we haven't seen him on this kind of stage before, you know?
So what else did Brad have to say?
Oh, I just talked about his background, like the fact that he is on this team in the first place. Like,
a second. You don't want to start off an interview with a player by saying, how do you properly pronounce your names? But you're willing to say, how the heck are you on Team Canada?
Well, because, like, go back to... I asked him, like, going back to when the World Cup was first announced that they were going to do it, like, I wondered if he actually thought he had a shot. Mm-hmm. Because Canada has so much talent. And I'm working on a story about Jake Muzzin, who's another guy who people I don't think expected to be on the team and is on the team and is considered quite good and rightfully so. But, like, I just wonder, with someone like Brad Marchand, when they announce that there's going to be a World Cup, is he thinking, like, hey, I can be on that? Mm-hmm. And he said he was, and to me that's somewhat surprising. And if you dig into the numbers about him, it's surprising, like, how productive he is as a goal scorer. Like, over the last 3 years, he's 12th among all players in even strength goals. Like, two less than Phil Kessel. So he's pretty good, and maybe tournaments like this help guys like him kind of build their profile.
You know what? I think it gets overlooked just because of the other antics, right? Like, he just does the other things that
really... And that's
really...
what the story is about, that he is more than just a quote-unquote rat.
Yeah.
Which is how Tyler Seguin referred to him affectionately.
So here, hey, now we're teammates. So here's the thing, if we talk about, you know, how are the players taking this World Cup of Hockey? Here's some strong words here by Team Finland, Alexander Barkov. So Team Finland taking on Team Sweden. It's a big rivalry between us, like Boston and Montreal in North America. So, of course, we want to win the game. We want to beat them. We hate them. And it's the same on the other side. Whoa.
That's natural, I think, between those two countries, don't you think?
So that's why there is a part of me that does feel when they do step out on the ice, you can't help but feel competitive. The competitive juices start flowing. And then, yes, when you are wearing your country's jersey and you are taking on a team who you typically are rivals with, like Team Canada, Team USA, you're just going to see that come out naturally. But there's just, you know, as we said, a whole bunch of other questions.
The prize at the end isn't a gold medal. The prize at the end is...
What is it?
A weird trophy. What's I don't it? Even know what the trophy looks like now. Well, I guess it's the symbol, right? Isn't that the trophy?
I still just have the image of Lemieux right. in 2004. Yeah. He looked like he was cradling a baby. He was right. like holding this thing. His hands were bigger than it. He's like, what is this? He's holding it.
Do you think people are going to watch a lot, like be engaged and interested? Or?
You know what? See, again, and you know, I brought this up before, covering international sports like Olympics and World Cups, as in soccer and the Pan Am Games, everyone poo-poos major international events before they start. I don't know why. I can't tell you why. It's a human thing. We always want to focus on the negative. We always want to say it's not going to work, from logistics to interest to social issues. We always say, this is why it's not going to work. And then puck drop. We all forget about it. We start figuring out where we can watch it, where we can buy tickets, where we can get jerseys. Suddenly it changes the minute the games start.
The jerseys now.
Oh, now you want to talk about the jersey? You don't like them?
Meh. Do you?
I have one. I have
No, you don't.
Well, it got sent here, and I took it. So now I have a Team Canada jersey.
Will you wear it?
I don't know. I'll find
it. Who's on the back?
It's no name. It's just Team Canada.
Interesting.
See? I have pride. I'm just saying. So,
what about North America? Why aren't you representing that?
Well, see, don't. This is now where you're starting to confuse things. You have to have a jersey that's like half Team Canada, a little bit Toronto Maple Leafs, a little Team North America.
That's where it's going to get funny. Like, when, if North America somehow advances and maybe plays Canada, like if North America's facing Canada or North America's facing the U.S. in like an important game. Suddenly Austin Matthews could be scoring against the U.S. I don't know. It's weird. That's where it's weird. In the anthems, it's weird. Like, it's weird.
It's a little weird. So we have to wait and see how it goes down. Pre-tournament start today. Toronto Maple Leafs. So Corey Prodman, ESPN writer and insider as well. And he does a lot of, you know, he looks at teams. He talks about the draft. He talks about prospect pools. And at the end of August, he came out with his whole top prospects, right? Heading into the 2016-17 season. And, I mean, there's certain guidelines that he goes by. But he basically said, without doubt, the Toronto Maple Leafs are ranked number one as the team with the best prospects and the most depth in their system. And he said, not only are they ranked number one, that the number two Arizona Coyotes are way down there as far as even, like, he said, Toronto Maple Leafs, they're on a whole pedestal of their own. So you look at the names, you look at guys, Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, William Nylander. We also got a taste of, you know, your Soshnikov, your Hyman, your Kapanen.
Mm-hmm.
And then you even look at, if we were to look right now, even who's in the system in your Travis Dermott, your Jeremy Bracco, your Dmytro Timoshov. If you're a Leafs fan, are you excited about this?
I would think so, probably. What's crazy to me is...
But wait, the only reason why I say that is because we've heard this in the past before, and then Leafs get all,
not,
Leafs fans
no,
kind of get
no,
all,
that's,
so this is different.
Who said that in the past? That's never been the case.
No, Leafs fans are, they're always
optimistic.
Yes, it's always like, should we be cautiously optimistic? Because they've heard this
they
before.
They have a right to be cautiously
and then
optimistic.
Players who have been deemed the savior usually get traded away.
Okay, here's why it's different. Two things. First, there's the disclaimer that we need to say with regard to prospects. Just because you have a lot of prospects doesn't mean you're going to have a lot of players.
Of course.
But the more you have, the better chance you have of getting good prospects.
And they do also become chips to trade.
To trade, which we've seen. What's crazy to me is Brendan Shanahan has been in charge just over 2 years, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He was hired, I think, in April or May of 2014. At that point, two plus years ago, they had one of the worst prospect pools in the league. Like, I wonder if you can go back, and I'm sure someone can, and pull up their ranking from a few years ago. It would have been bad. They didn't have prospects. Like, when I first started covering the Leafs, I remember, like, the only guy they had ever to call up of any intrigue was Jiří Tlusti. Like, it was always the answer when they needed a call-up. It was Jiří Tlusti.
Mm-hmm.
And Tlusti, you know, he's developed into an okay NHLer, but he's nothing special. But they didn't have, like, this pool of guys. And so when you're placing everything on one guy to be a stud, there's a chance it's not going to work. And that's what they've tried to do, is they've tried to get as many guys as they can who have high potential. And then if 3 of every 10 work out, you have a good team. And that's what they've got. They've got so many guys that you can look at and say, hey, like, he might play. Like, that's what's interesting to me about the Leaf prospect pool, is you can watch these guys and say, I see potential. Like Nikita Soshnikov. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see, like, how he could be an NHLer. And I could see how Connor Brown, who I think had 6 points in 6 games or something like that when he came up, how he could potentially be an NHLer.
And he's the guy who Mike Babcock even said before the start of last season that he could see up with the club. And then, of course, Connor Brown ended up breaking his ankle and he ended up missing quite a few months. So when he returned, went to the Marlies, and then right away, you know, was putting up points, mm-hmm. right, with the Toronto Marlies. So Connor Brown is another guy to keep your eye on. But this is where it starts to get interesting, because, you know, not all of these players now are waiver exempt. So if they're not doing well at a camp, these are decisions you have to make. I think guys like Connor Carrick, as a, you know, smaller defenseman, still impressed when he was up. Then, you know, I know it's at the AHL level, but he's a 2-time AHL All-Star, and he led all skaters, defensemen, forwards, in Calder Cup playoff points with 18. This is a guy now who I think would have to clear
waivers. I'm not sure if he does. I have to check.
Thinking about Josh Levo. You know, like, these are just guys that you have to make. That's another factor that you're weighing in, right?
Yeah, but that's when you have a lot of prospects, and those are, Levo's more on your fringe of, like, mm-hmm. in terms of some of these guys, in terms of upside. Like, he showed at times last year that maybe he can be a guy who can play. So, but at least now, if you're the Leafs and you have to risk losing somebody at some point, like we saw last year, what they did with Frankie Corrado, where they kept him up the whole year, didn't play him. They didn't want to risk losing him. Like, he was an asset. And to your point, like, that's the benefit of having all these guys, is suddenly, if you need to make a trade, you have prospects to trade, right? Like, we see it with good teams, and we see it with Chicago, like, how many guys that they've lost over the years and just been able to replace them.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it in other sports, too. Like, you see it in baseball, you see it in basketball. When you have guys that you can afford to move to help your team, suddenly when you're a cup contender and you need someone at the deadline, you can move one of these prospects and it's not going to kill your pool.
Do you think, when you're talking about all these young players, maybe that's the reason why, and I know Dave Poulin seems to think Brandon Press, who signed to a PTO for the Toronto Maple Leafs, does actually have a good chance of making the team, because do you need to mix in a guy with experience? We're not necessarily talking about the guy who's going to suddenly be on your first or second line, but the guy with experience, the guy who's kind of been there, done that, and a little bit gritty too. Maybe he's the guy
that
can just throw his
you can have like that.
Weight around. Well, really,
they have guys.
They have a Matt Martin now who they brought in.
They have Milan Mihalik. Like, I don't know.
Leo Komarov can kind of be
I don't buy it.
But they're young. I mean, it's a young team.
But that's the other side of the coin. And I asked Dave this when I got to speak to him a couple weeks ago. Like, how many young guys can you actually have? What's mm-hmm. is there a number, like, where it's too many? Like, how many can you have? 7 rookies? Can you? I don't know. Like, who's good? Like,
who
we know,
wrote the rule
we
that
know
you
who's
can't?
Gonna make
I don't
it.
Know.
Okay, so let's count. So Auston Matthews is going to be on the team. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure William Nylander will be on the team. That's 2. Zaitsev, I'm pretty sure, will be on the team. That's 3. Then there's Hyman. Then there's Soshnikov. Then there's Brown. Then there's Marner. How many of those guys make the team?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it gets to a point where if you're Mike Babcock, you've got to decide, like, what's best for these guys' development? How much are they going to play? Can I shelter them? Can I keep them from getting exposed? You know, like, these are, I don't know. What do you think? How many should you have?
But that's where I wonder if you need that balance as well of having the older players. Like, that's where I do, to an extent, think guys like a Brooks, like Matt Martin, they do have a bigger role than maybe we think than they do out on the ice, because you need that kind of voice.
But you can only have so many
room.
Players, right? There's not enough room for all these guys. So, like,
that's
you
where
can, if you want to count, like, Komarov is 1, Kadri, it's Komarov. I don't know why I said Komarov. Komarov, Kadri, Van Riemsdyk, Matthews, Nylander, Bozak, Martin. Like, that's seven right there.
Did you say Lupul?
He's on my depth chart. I don't know what's going to happen with him. Like, Holland, Fraze, Kirby Reichel, Connor Brown. Like, how many of these guys? That's why training camp this year especially is going to be so weird and interesting, is because for half of it, some of the, probably not for half of it, it depends when everybody gets eliminated, but for some of it, Mike Babcock's not going to be there. Some of these players aren't going to be there. How do they decide, like, who's making the team and who's not based on this weird...
And I do feel like this is the year where it is really pivotal for the Leafs.
Pivotal why?
Because to what you just said, you have so many young guys. What is the decision? Do they need to spend more time with either a junior team in Mitch Marner or the minor team with the Marlies? Or are these guys you are going to keep up? They're ready, but... Do we also need to make sure mentally, because here's another thing, and Morgan Riley said it best. He's like, we're here to win. We're not here to, I don't want to say, you know, he said, we don't always want to just be learning, basically is what he was saying. We want to also be winning. Mm-hmm. So there's only so much learning you can do before your spirits get dampened.
Well, what happened in Edmonton?
That's the exact example. The Edmonton Oilers, you have this incredible talent, but they didn't necessarily have the experience. And all of a sudden, you start off losing. And whether it's a conscious or subconscious thing, you just get used to losing. And how do you know how to get out of that rut? How do you know how to win unless you have a veteran who's been there, done that?
Yeah, but that's the danger in putting all your young guys in at once and just saying, go free. But also, to be fair to those guys, it is a lot more complicated than that. And I think sometimes they get lumped in as the reason that the team is not successful. They are not the reason the team is not successful.
No, you got to look beyond the ice.
They were poorly managed for a while. They have no prospects. Their defense was bad. Their goaltending was bad. And I feel like Taylor Hall and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jordan Eberle, they get bunched in as the reason that Edmonton has gone 10 years without a playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Like, it's not that simple.
But, no, of course
but
not.
But it is a lesson in don't bring up a million young guys and expect them just to...
That's the point I'm trying to make. Great. So now I feel like the Leafs are in this position of what do we do when you've got so many young guys?
And that's why camp will be so interesting to see who they decide is ready. Like, I think Zach Hyman, given his age, given his size, given his experience, I think he's a guy who makes it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it makes sense. But, like, maybe if it's Marner, they're like, maybe he can go back and get another year. And yet, Lou Lamoriello was on, I think it was Scotty Mac and I, and he basically said that he expects Marner to be on the Leafs. We'll see if that happens.
It's all in Marner's hand, really, on how he performs. At least that's what they've been telling him.
It's how
he does at training camp. Hey, the Leafs said that. That's what they've been saying.
Management always says,
I'm holding them to it.
How will you do that?
I don't know.
Lou on and just...
I'm going to show up to training camp every single day. I'm going to be there in the stands with my little notepad and pen, and they're going to know I'm
taking
notes. Come
challenge Babcock at a press conference.
Nope, that's okay.
That's fun.
I'll stay right here. Thank you very much. We got more coming up on Leafs Lunch here. As you continue to listen on TSN 1050, streaming online, tsn.ca, the TSN Go app, as well as watching on TSN4. Welcome back to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050, streaming online, tsn.ca, the TSN Go app, as well as on your television set on TSN 4, Andy Petrillo, alongside Jonas Siegel, who's now the national hockey writer with the Canadian Press. I remember you
when you were just running
around with your little radio recorder and, excuse me, can't get an interview, excuse me. You actually still are pretty polite, but I don't know if that's how you sound. That's just in my brain how you
sound.
Totally
how I sound.
Okay, World Cup of Hockey begins today. Later on tonight, games have already started, but tonight, Team North America taking on Team Europe. So pleased to welcome to the show Ryan Jankowski, Director of Operations for Team North America, as well as Head Scout for Hockey Canada. How are you doing, Ryan?
Very good, Andy. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking the time today. And I mean, as someone who's been a part of Hockey Canada, you're no stranger to having this incredible talent pool to choose from. So how difficult was it to even comprehend putting this incredible Team North America team together?
Well, and you have to certainly start with the credit to our management group who put the team together, led by Peter Chiarelli, Stan Bowman, and then Adam Graves, Paul Fenton, and Pat Verbeek. They were the ones that were tasked with putting this team together. and it was a fun process for them. Being privileged to be on those calls and kind of organizing that part of it for them, it was tremendous. And when this started a year ago, and really it was a year ago right now, it's changed a lot, and there was a lot of projections that needed to happen with the players. I think, we all wanted to see how McDavid and Eichel started their seasons, but nowhere was Austin Matthews on the list. Shane Gostisbehere, with the season that he had, he was a kind of late joiner to the conversation. So there was a lot of moving parts, and that's what was different probably than any other country. Because of the emergence of the players, the young guys being young and finding their way through the National Hockey League as rookies or in their second year, really climbed the list, and credit to those guys to find these players.
Well, so Ryan, do you recall what may have catapulted someone like Austin Matthews to be in the conversation then eventually make the team?
Well, obviously, projected first overall pick required some conversation, and as we went through kind of October, November, December, the World Juniors was critical, and Austin obviously had a great World Juniors. His second half was important, and I think really what stamped it off was the play at the World Championships and being a key part of that American team led especially Peter and Stan to say this guy deserves a shot to be on the team.
How do you have a conversation, as you mentioned, with all these young players who are already in the NHL? They're making an impact on their team. By no means are they fringe players. How do you have the conversation to say, listen, you're with a massive pool of talent here, so you may not necessarily be top six forward, top D pairing. You may not even be on the number one and number two power play unit. I mean, how does that management go down with such a young crew? I mean, I know you have to do it with Team Canada when it comes to the Olympics, but you could almost argue these are older guys. Maybe they know, they get it. But how do you do that with younger players?
Well, that's a great question. Todd McClellan and the coaching staff, Dave Tippett, John Cooper, Gerard Gallant, Jay Woodcroft, they had a real frank conversation with the players. When we got together in Montreal earlier this week, and you're going to have to sacrifice yourself. You're going to have to sacrifice ice time. You're not going to all play on the power play. You're not all going to play top six. But I think with the excitement and the uniqueness of this team, so far the players, there's been great buy-in on that. And yet let's get through some games and see where the players are at. But that comes from the coaching staff, and that was an important message to the players when we did get together, that you're going to have to sacrifice for the betterment of this team to have success. No different than when we put a World Junior team together. There's a lot of sacrifice that has to be made there. Whereas you mentioned Team Canada, Team USA, Team Sweden, Team Finland, there's a little bit of a pecking order. You've got your stars, and then they're more mature players. They're more established players. They understand what it takes because they've participated in Olympic Games in the past.
Well, is that something that's just known when you're going to come represent Canada? Like, I was talking to Tyler Seguin the other day, and he said it's just the Canada way, that when you come and play for Canada internationally, you just know, you're not necessarily going to be doing the same things you normally would.
I sure think so, and I like to think that that's one thing that Hockey Canada does great. I know we certainly try and establish that at the World Juniors as well. Again, a little bit harder there because they're all superstars in junior hockey, and they're still young. They're feeling their way around it, but that's a huge message from us to our players when they come in, is you have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice for the betterment of the team, and I think the players that are representing Canada certainly do that on an ongoing basis, whether it's a World Championship or an Olympic. And I think our players have certainly bought into that. It seems like they've bought into it here with Team North America. And then we'll see more as we go through our first exhibition game tonight.
There's been a lot of talk of Team North America, whether it's from, people in the hockey world, fans watching. This seems to be the team everyone's curious about. Everyone wants to watch. Everyone wants to see how they're doing. Do the players feel that right now?
Absolutely. They're really excited for tonight. Just being at the morning skate today, they're like, it's time to play a game. And then you could see the excitement coming, and it's a curiosity too. We don't, you don't know how you're going to be. We think we're going to be a well-prepared team. We've got a lot of young legs. We've got a lot of speed. We've got a lot of talent. And yet you look over at the morning skate today and you see Marian Hossa on the ice, and you see Andrzej Kopitar and Zdeno Chara and who are established NHLers. And that's the fun thing about this, is that nobody really knows, including ourselves. And yet, I think the players have real good confidence. They've really enjoyed the pace of the practices and been able to get up to speed really fast. And we'll see where things start off tonight.
Ryan, I just wondered, at some point in this whole process, did you ever just take a pen and a pad out and just sketch out and have some fun with line combinations, given the talent you have?
Well, our management group sure did. We had a really good meeting in January around the Oilers' schedule, so we were able to include Todd McClellan and Jay Woodcroft, and they had a lot of fun. They had a lot of fun throwing lines up and sketching and, you know, like you said, doodling out some lines and putting some combinations together. And that was a real unique part of this process, because for the first point, we weren't just looking at players individually. They were looking at a team. And that step to now build the team and who's going to fit where, it was a lot of fun. It was neat to be in that room. And yet, really from January till now, there has been changes in that roster because of the emergence of some young players, like we talked about with Austin Matthews and maybe even Colton Parayko and Shane Gostisbehere. And yet, that was certainly a fun part of the process, was kind of, you know, etching out who could fit where on this team.
Speaking with Ryan Jankowski, Director of Operations for Team North America, as well as Head Scout for Hockey Canada. So out of the eight teams in the World Cup of Hockey, Team North America has not yet named a captain. Are you waiting for the pre-tournament games, waiting for somebody to emerge? Do you even need to name a captain?
I think they will at some point. The coaches have been kind of just feeling out the process and seeing what they have from a group of leadership. And I know they've had some discussions on it, and yet, really not sure when that's all going to be named. I don't know whether, they'll learn some things tonight and be able to do that after tonight, or if they want to wait. So I know the coaches are excited to see the group of players in general, but they've really wanted to see how things played out here the first few days.
Okay, before I let you go, we had Morgan Riley on a couple days ago, and this was before the announcement was made that you're going to play both the American and Canadian national anthem. I asked him if the team put together a list of songs that perhaps they would like to have played, and he kind of chuckled about it. He said, well, we did, but based on the maturity level that went behind the decision there to put these songs together, management didn't exactly take our suggested music list. Did you ever see that list?
Did not see that list.
I was waiting to see if Justin Bieber was on it.
It would be interesting to see it. I've heard some of the songs in the dressing room, and I wonder what they're thinking a little bit at times, but... But no, they're certainly they're young, and they're having a lot of fun, and that's part of this process, to get everybody together and have some fun and have some giggles, like you said there. But maybe a good thing that Picciarelli and Stan Bowman didn't see that list.
Nice. All right, Ryan, thanks so much for taking the time here on Leafs Lunch.
No problem. Anytime.
Ryan Jankowski, Director of Operations for Team North America, as well as Head Scout for Hockey Canada. So he's used to having a put together star-studded roster. It's no stranger to that.
No, and it's going to be weird for them, given how young that team is. Like he said, like all of a sudden you've got all these young guys and they're facing off against 36-year-olds and 37 and 38-year-olds.
Who are,
I think they should,
experienced and massive human beings. Like, it's funny because when you're in your own world, so to say, like here you are, you're practicing with your team, you know, you're the guy. Like you're the big guns, and you know, you're highly talented. You cannot take away from Team North America one bit. There's a reason why these guys are in the NHL and doing what they're doing. But there's something about thinking you're the guy and then looking over and seeing guys who have been doing it anywhere from 5 to 10 years. And you're like, oh, maybe I'm not as big deal as
I thought. Was one of the more interesting things about covering Canada's camp in the last few days is you like look around the room. And usually in NHL dressing rooms, people like huddle around the best players. But in this team, like everybody is a best player. Mm-hmm. So like you just see guys who on their own teams are just like these stars, and people are just kind of leaving them alone because like there's Crosby over there, you know, there's Price. You know what I mean? Like it's weird that way. They just kind of get pushed down the pecking order.
So you mentioned, obviously, it's inevitable. Well, I think I said inevitable, but we were in consensus, yes, about that's what everyone's going to be watching for here, is who gets injured during World Cup. And I hate to say it, and I know if there's Habs fans listening right now, they're like, stop it. For the love of God, stop it. But what about Carey Price? Because there's a part of me that feels bad for Price in the sense that everyone's treating him with like these kid gloves, like, oh, heaven forbid should you go out and play and wrap you up in bubble wrap. And this is a professional athlete.
Well, and he said any goaltender who in this tournament hasn't played for a few months, right? Mm-hmm. He's just not played for 10 months. So it's significantly longer. He said everything is fine physically. It'll just take him, he just needs to get into some games and start feeling good about himself. But like I said with Braden Holtby, it can be weird for goalies. Like, suddenly you get two games and now the games count. You're not feeling your best. Like, it's like any job. Like, when those first couple days when you've been off a while, you're just not sharp. And for a professional athlete, it's got to be, I don't know, 50 times that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Just because you're not sharp, you're not engaged. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, at some point, I'll ask Noodles about it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll talk about it.
You don't want to talk to... Oh, you're talking goalies. I'm going to say you don't want to talk to O-Dog? What,
well,
O-Dog?
O-Dog doesn't know. He's not a goalie. He could tell you from a player's perspective. It's probably the same thing. Like, these guys are used to coming into training camp and getting all these two-a-days and skating and getting their conditioning back up. And now it's like, Friday, you play a game.
Yeah,
Saturday,
no, it's different. We think we work out because we go to the gym. It's not even close to the intensity.
Just to conclude on that, there's a reason Canada is not practicing today. They are off the ice. And Mike Babcock said it's because historically, or what he's been told, on the fourth day of camp, that's when guys start to get hurt. And so, even if a guy doesn't suffer a serious injury, like, what if a guy tweaks a groin and suddenly has to miss the start of the season?
And you don't want to also be known as that coach that injured the player that belongs to another team. It all gets started today, folks. That's Jonas Siegel. I'm Annie Petrillo. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch. We will see Team North America. For all you Leafs fans, that means Austin Matthews and Morgan Riley are taking to the ice. You've been listening on TSN 1050, TSN.ca, the Go app, as well as watching on TSN 4. Coming up next, you got TSN Today with Mike Hogan and Scott MacArthur. Don't go anywhere.